All right, you're back in the BFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Wednesday, July 27th. I'm Doug Norrie. I've got Chris Durrell on the line. Chris, how's it going?
It's going great this morning.
I'm feeling kind of fired up, so we're going to see how this goes today. But if you're first time with us, we're from DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, here to help you make some lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free content going up all the time on the site, chat room for you get your questions answered going, you know, basically throughout the whole day. And you can also grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, which helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you are all set for DFS MLB. Chris, I'm coming off a night where I first of all, last night's lineups totally crushed, which I'm feeling good. So woke up to a really nice ROI on the FanDuel and DraftKings, and actually played some fantasy draft last night. But now I'm feeling like there's a lot of, at least in the comments or the chat section this morning, a lot of maybe disagreement or which way to go with optimal lineups today. So I'm wondering if we're going to be on the same page. And if you hear me filibustering, bro, you just jump in and say, well, you've been going on for like 6 minutes now. And because I know sometimes when I get overexcited, I tend to just get very, very long-winded, as evidenced by the two-minute intro where you haven't said a word. You wrote the picks.
Hey, I like the sound of your voice. Things are good.
hopefully everyone else does too. You wrote the picks last night. I know there was a change where we had Estrada pitching, and then sometime in the middle of the night, at some point, it was switched over to Dickey, so that changes some things a little bit. Let's start off with the pitching on the early slate, 6 games. Walk me through how this is going to break down for the early slate of games, which I think would be a pretty popular slate to play for people.
Yeah, I really liked the value with Estrada when I was writing the picks, and he was slated to go in there. Just I really liked the price on FanDuel especially, but seeing that we don't have him, it kind of pushes us up a little bit today. In the early slate, at least, we've got Bumgarner, McCarthy, and Strasburg, and Carrasco at the top. And out of those guys, just looking at the matchup, I'm going to go with Bumgarner today. 13-2 on DraftKings. It comes in 11-8 on FanDuel. He's been going pretty good lately. He's got a high K upside. He's probably got the highest upside for the matchup today. I do like Strasburg as well. I just think the matchup in Cleveland on the road isn't going to be as favorable as Bumgarner's. And I believe the Reds are they rank 23rd and again in WOBA against left-handed pitching, and they're striking out about 23.3% of the time versus lefties. So he's going to be my top guy on the slate. Which one of those two guys do you prefer?
Yeah, it's Bumgarner all the way for me. And I think that one thing I'm actually sort of encouraged about is that the Reds have been, well, and this is what people will go to. This is one of the things that kind of fires me up sometimes, is that people will look at recent returns for a team and be like, oh, this team's so hot right now. How can you play pitcher against this team? You can just be hot for a couple games and still be bad, which the Reds are. So the Reds, they're 25th in the league, and I had them at 25th in the league at WOBA against lefties pitching this year, and that's in like the second best hitter's park in all of baseball, so it's a non-adjusted stat, so meaning that they stink. And when most of their threats come from lefty bats in Votto and Duvall in the middle of the lineup. Excuse me, Votto and Bruce in the middle of the lineup. And then you have a guy like Duvall, who's basically a two true outcome guy. He either hits a home run or he strikes out. And when you're pitching in San Francisco, which is where you go from the best hitter's park in baseball to the worst, then I love the upside on Bumgarner. And I'm really hoping people talk themselves out of him because they look at, you know, the Reds have been quote unquote hot lately. And that just, that gets them off and they get scared, because Bumgarner for me is clearly the play.
Yeah. And in the early slate, I don't know how scared people. Well, they might get a little bit scared. Just you're looking at DraftKings; he's $3,000 more than, you know, or almost $3,000 more than McCarthy and Strasburg, just below him in that next little range there. So you could have some people going down, building a lot of lineups with McCarthy and Strasburg, Carrasco today, and kind of leaving Bumgarner. So yeah, myself, he's far and ahead for me today, and number one guy. The only other guy I'm really looking at, I said I was kind of scared of the Strasburg match up a little bit today. I'm going down a little bit and going with Adam Conley at home for the Marlins. He's got a little bit of K upside. I think he's 8.62 K per nine, and he's going up against the Phillies, who are actually ranking dead last against left-handed pitching this year. So he's a guy I'll be definitely looking at today.
Yeah, the Conley's walk rate scares me a little bit, but the Phillies just aren't a good team, and that really helps him. The money line's a nice is in a nice spot for him. I think he's like minus 170 headed in with a lower run line coming through the Philly side. So he you know, money line, we always say it correlates, and it does. It's something that you want to look at. You know, another guy that's a high money line, you mentioned a couple of times, but more in passing, was McCarthy. So McCarthy is a guy actually we were chatting about a little bit this morning as we were getting ready for the, not you and I, in the chat room, we were talking about McCarthy. Here's my concern with McCarthy. The peripherals are great. The money line's great. His problem is pitch count. Like, he hasn't gone over 85 pitches since he came in off the DL, and I don't suspect he goes, if he goes more than that, I would suspect it's only like in like the 90 range. Like, I don't think they're going to push him more than, say, 10% more, you know, start over start. So his peripherals look awesome. And yes, he went six innings, but one thing that stat that really stood out for me with him is that he only has a 170 BABIP against so far. And so when you're only throwing 80, 85 or 90 pitches, and you've been insanely lucky on the balls, every ball, just hitting a mitt, basically, and making it out, that is really doesn't leave much room for error. And so, you know, yes, the Rays strike out a lot. The matchup's good. His peripherals are good. He's a good pitcher. All that stuff. I agree with all those things. My main concern is if he were to get even, you know, 50% more unlucky, let's say, or I don't know if I said that right. I don't know. You understand what I mean. Like, if he was if the BABIP regresses even some, that turns, you know, a 10-pitch inning into a 20-pitch inning, and now all of a sudden you're really worried about him getting through five innings. So that's my concern with him. And I know it's easy to look at the strikeouts. They're great. Peripherals, they're great. Matchup, great. But be very, very concerned about that pitch count, because your upside's limited if you're only going to throw 90 pitches. And you can pretty much guarantee, knowing that going in, really, really limits the upside. So I think pitching's interesting today. I think I'm with you. Bumgarner, for me, all the way in cash. It's a little tough to stomach paying that $13K on FanDuel, or excuse me, on DraftKings, but you're going to need to go find someone cheap. What do you think of Carrasco against the Nationals?
I'm myself staying away from Carrasco today. I don't like the matchup versus Washington, and then I also don't like him going up against Strasburg as well. I mean, it could be a low-scoring game. I just think the win potential is a little bit down going up against one of the best aces in my eyes in the league. So
yeah, the DraftKings price is almost going to dare you to play him. He's like right around 9,000.
Same price as Conley.
Exactly. So it's a price thing more than, like, his Ks are down a little bit. Dusty Baker finally like got his brain working last night by moving Harper and Murphy up to second and third in the lineup rather than just continuing to trot up bum after bum in the second slot. Yeah. So that worries me a little bit that he finally like kind of woke up to what the lineup should be for them, and that just makes them, the Nationals, a more potent team to have Murphy and Harper hitting as far up in the lineup as they can be. But he's probably the best talent in that range, like in that between him and Conley. You know, he's, you know, 1,600 less than McCarthy. So I think for me, the thing with Carrasco would just simply be the price. He has the win expectancy and the win expectancy diminished because of Strasburg on the other side, and the Nationals are a good team, but it's like a dare with the price. All right, let's go.
Before we go forward, I think for GPP, a good strategy, you know, if you want to save some money, load up on the bats, which it's being a smaller six-game slate, it's going to be tough to get Bumgarner in there and you know, two or three of the big bats. So one way I probably might lean today, actually, in just the last few minutes, I changed my mind a little bit on Carrasco, is putting Carrasco with Conley.
Yeah.
Right around that 9,000 mark. And that's going to leave you somewhere in the range of 4,000 average left on DraftKings. You're going to be able to get some of the big bats in. So I can definitely see that as a viable option in GPP.
And I think that's what's going to happen with a lot of people in terms of Bumgarner's salary, is that they're going to look at, and they're just going to have a really hard time stomaching that. That 13,000 is a lot. It's a lot. I mean, right now he's coming into our optimal lineups, and typically when a pitcher like that comes in this early, it won't pivot really, because it just sees those that you getting the best bang for your buck at that price point, and it's just not going to pivot. But there's a lot of ways you can go. There's a lot of Carrasco and Conley combinations, McCarthy and Carrasco, you know, all that like mid-rangey, higher end piece of it. You just gives you so much more wiggle. What about Dickey against the Padres? 6,200. Interesting. 6,200.
Why you snap called? I just can't stomach Dickey. I'm a huge Jays fan too, and I call him the streak stopper in the opposite kind of sense. So today seems like one of those days. Jays have won four in a row, and I just the Padres have, you know, they've really stood out in a few games, especially last week where we target them, mm-hmm. And they blow up against a pitcher. Well, now they're facing a even less than average pitcher, and I could see this game being pretty high scoring. I don't see a total yet on it, so that kind of scares me thinking it's going to be a high scoring game.
Well, that it originally opened at -250 in favor of the Blue Jays, but I'm still seeing that, and I think that's left over from Estrada being there. I don't think that's a Dickey line at all. I mean, I don't think it won't change the run line for the Blue Jays at all.
No,
but the problem with the Padres is they're, you know, some of our modeling is based on full season stats, and early in the season they were trotting out almost an entire right-handed lineup that struck out all the time, and now they're just slightly different. So they've jettisoned Upton, which he was striking out like 25% of the time or something like that, or maybe more, like 28%. So
now he's a J.
Right, exactly. That move made no sense to me. But so he's gone, and they replaced him essentially with guys like Dickerson and Schimpf, who are lefty bats who don't strike out as much, who actually have power, and that's a pretty decent change in the middle of your lineup for a right-handed pitcher. So they're still not a great offensive team. They still have a lot of swings and misses in their bats for sure, but they're just not the, you know, 24% of the time strikeout rate that they were at the beginning of the year. They are a little more dangerous, and that has me a little worried. The only thing with Dickey is if that line stayed at like -200 for him at 6,200, it's going to be tempting to pair him with Bumgarner and get your savings
there. Build
some
stars and scrubs.
Yeah, but I agree with you. He blows. I'm looking at these peripherals are so bad. So he's not your, you know, your older brother's R.A. Dickey when he was with the Mets. But okay, let's head over to, I think we've touched on almost every pitcher on this slate. The other guy that actually is cheap is Eduardo Rodriguez. I don't know and Fulmer. Do you have any thoughts on those guys?
No, I'm all about the bats in that game.
Yeah, I'm with you too. Fulmer's been running a little hot. I can see there's some regression coming from his peripherals. Okay, so we've covered, that's the most pitchers we've ever talked about on a six game slate, I think. But but it's interesting because there's a lot of good pitchers on the slate. There are, for six games, there are, I would say, almost every pitcher is viable, except for like Luis Perdomo and maybe Zach Eflin. Every other pitcher is decent at least, and so decent or better. And when that's the case, the decisions are closer, and I think those decisions are going to be pretty close going into this slate.
It makes me want to play the early slate a lot more than I did last night looking at the pitching, that's for sure.
It makes you want to?
It makes me want to play because there's, you know, when there's that many options, you know, there's not going to be as much chalk, and you can really grab some, you can sway your lineups to get some low ownership. Especially for tournaments in a six-game slate. If you can do that in a six-game slate, it's definitely worth playing.
I think you're going to see ownership numbers, especially in pitching, just all over the place.
Yeah.
If Bumgarner was 1,000 less, I don't think you would, but the fact that he's so expensive, I really see people struggling with what to do with their pitching, especially when they're trying to fit in some bats. Let's talk about some of the bats today. I'm not sure we can go position by position here because we're going to run out of time. We got PGA coming up at the end of this too, which we want to talk about. So I don't want to push into like that hour and a half range, which we might if we go position by position on this slate and then the next slate also. But let's take a look at some teams first. If there's a team you're targeting overall, who is there one that you can get enough value on in cash games to feel good about it, or are you going to kind of spread it out through a couple different teams?
When it comes to cash games, I don't play a whole bunch of cash games, but when I do, I really use the optimizer a lot,
yep.
Which I'll lock in my favorite pitchers and maybe one, maybe two, maybe a value bat and a big bat, and then I'll let it do the rest. And that's been working out quite well for me, especially I play mostly head-to-heads when it comes to cash games. So I like to mix it up. If I do a stack, it's three guys max, probably two. I really like the two, usually like the 3-4 hitter, or in cash games, the 1-2 hitter usually gets some value there. It's the guys with on-base percentage and stuff. But the hitters, the stacks today, I'm looking at probably the Blue Jays, Red Sox. Really like the Tiger. I think the Tigers might come in a little bit under-owned compared to the Red Sox. Not under-owned in the overall sense, but I think they're going to be a little bit lower-owned than the Red Sox just because the Red Sox have been extremely hot, running really hot lately. Highest scoring team, I think 550 runs already this year. So they'll be right up there. But the Jays, I just think this is a game, like I said before, it could be one of the highest scoring games, and I think the Jays can take advantage of Luis Perdomo. And I got kind of a question for you on him. He's kind of a little bit different when you look at the stats this year. He's 58% ground ball percentage, so he's dealing a ton of ground balls, but when he's given up the fly ball, he is at 21% home run to fly ball rate. So that seems odd to me that you get that big of a ground ball pitcher giving up that many home runs. So he's going to be a guy I'm going to be targeting with the Jays bats for sure.
Yeah, his ERA makes him look horrendous. He's not, you know, he's got a seven, almost a seven ERA. He's more like a four xFIP guy. So that's a big. I mean, he's more like, he's actually a lot more like R.A. Dickey than he is like the worst pitcher in the world, which his ERA would suggest. Yeah, he strikes out 7 per 9, 3 walks. You mentioned the ground ball rate. That 58% ground ball rates for pitchers and for hitters tend to normalize pretty quickly. You don't need tons and tons of innings to figure out sort of what kind of pitcher you are. So, you know, heavy ground ball guys will just induce a lot of ground balls from the start. And that 58% is a real number in the sense that I think it's sustainable probably for whatever. And he's just run bad in terms of BABIP. He's run really bad in BABIP, and he's run really bad in home. You mentioned the home runs. 21% of home run to fly ball rate. That's pretty high, and yeah. Especially when you pitch some of your games in Petco. So I'm not willing to call. He's not a bum by any means. He's not very good. The Blue Jays are. If anything, the run line's probably a little high for them, just because maybe Vegas took a look at the ERA and thinks that that's more of an issue than his actual peripherals are. I'd be bearish on their overall run total. Right now, I have them at like 6.27, and I could see that being a little high. I mean, they're a great offense, and I think that you end up playing most of them in cash games because they're just not that expensive yet. But yeah, I think I'm with you on Perdomo. You make a really good point about his ground ball rate. That's a real thing, and if you can get ground balls in a hitter's park, then you can skate by without letting up too much damage.
And he's actually been worse at Petco.
Interesting. Yeah, that could be bad numbers. That could be bad luck. I mean, that could be small. I'm not sure.
It is a pretty small sample size this season, so it's not a whole lot to go off of. One thing mentioning of note for the Blue Jays, something I've really noticed lately. I watch most of their games as a Jays fan, but when you stack the Jays, you know, you want to go, you say 1 through 4 and get Bautista, Donaldson, Encarnacion, and Saunders. It's tough to fit because they're a little bit higher price. What I've noticed with the Jays is they don't really produce in bunches in the lineup like that. You know, you'll get Donaldson who'll hit a dong, two dongs in a night. Encarnacion goes 0-for-4. You drop down to the bottom of the lineup. You got Pilar and Travis. Pilar and Travis coming through. So it's like you get a cheap guy in the Jays at the bottom of the lineup combined with the top guy. So they're a lineup that I'm not necessarily going to go always 1-for-4, 2-for-5 with their hitters. I might grab two of the big bats and then two of the cheaper bats near the bottom of the lineup because, I mean, Pilar and Travis, especially against lefties, so not so much today, but against lefties especially, will be, when I'll grab those two and then two big guys at the top. So they're a team I think you can do that.
They're a super deep team, and they run it all the way down the lineup. You know, even guys like Smoker is coming cheap in some spots, only 2,700. He could hit seventh, and I'd probably be okay with 2,700 for him just to save some money and get one of the higher pitchers in there. I'd want to see their lineup heading in. Pilar is still cheap on DraftKings at 3,400, and he can hit down in the bottom. These guys can hit in the lower part of the lineup for me, and I'm going to be generally okay with it because the Blue Jays are expected to put up so many more runs than the next closest team, the Red Sox, and the Red Sox's price is almost out of contention at this point because they've just been so great that every single one of their guys is priced
like 4,500 or more.
Exactly, it's impossible to get. You just can't play you can't play them all. And Fulmer is, while Fulmer I think has been hot, he's still good. He's still a good pitcher. He's just not a 2 ERA guy like it suggests that he is. He's more like in the mid-3s of xFIP. So that's not like necessarily a value spot for me going after the Red Sox, even though they are so hot. Let's go through and just give a couple more possible value plays. Maybe if you see anybody, you know, if you mentioned anyone that you wrote up last night that you maybe coming at a little lower price point that you can stomach today, just so we can fit in a guy, if we wanted to fit in a guy like Bumgarner.
Well, I really liked Russell Martin. That's not going to be the case anymore. Dickey in there. Tolley's going to be in there. So I'm punting catcher today, I might take a chance with Tolley. Just left-handed hitter against Perdomo in the hitter's park. He's going to be – I'm just trying to look for his price here. I can't quite find it. It looks like 2,600 on DraftKings today. So if I'm punting, I'm probably going to go there. Victor Martinez, I like. I mean, he's not the cheapest. He's a little bit. He's first base, so he's 3,500 on DraftKings, 3,700 at catcher on FanDuel. I like him hitting from the right side against Eduardo Rodriguez in the middle of that Tigers order.
Yeah, he's much better split when it comes to hitting lefties for his career. It's the price is getting up there a little bit. It's funny. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that about Tolley because I had Martin in there, and I always forget that that's the case. Like I don't have a Tolley built into the logic of our database to swap in Tolley when Dickey plays. Yeah. So, I mean, we update it when the lineups come out, so it's not like an issue in the end because it'll always be updated. But that was a guy that was showing up, and I did forget that he has that your personal catcher, whatever you call it, yeah. Like the guy that catches you. Yeah. So I think we're gonna be. This is a day where I'm really hoping. And it's not always the case, but I'm really hoping that we get some like lineup juggling from some of these teams where we can get a cheaper bat near the top of the lineup that just hasn't been hitting there as much, like a Derek Dietrich maybe. I don't mind Upton at 3,000 on FanDuel against the lefty. That's his better split. Again, I have no love for Eduardo Rodriguez. Even like a guy like Brett Wallace against Dickey in a good park. So even though he's been hitting down in the lower part of the lineup, Smoke. There are some cheaper guys. But I'm going to need to see those lineups come out. Tulo's 2,900 on FanDuel. That's a great price for him. You're going to need to target these guys. And I think we're going to be really lineup dependent when it comes down to it. Now, the good thing is, you know, the early slate starts at 12. I suspect we have just about all the lineups in except for maybe the Dodger game and the San Fran game. And I'm not actually targeting as many of the bats in that game either. So I'm hoping that most of the value sort of surfaces from these early slated games, but it's going to be tough with the bats. I mean,
yeah.
Do you feel the same way? I mean, when you have Strasburg, Carrasco, Conley, you know, Fulmer, McCarthy, Bumgarner, that's for only six games. That doesn't leave a lot of room for error with the hitter.
As a tournament player, I actually don't prefer these days with so many pitching options, especially in a small slate like this. I'd rather have your 8,000 to 9,000 guys, you know, have three or four or five options in there. It just, I really like grabbing the bats and stacking bats. So this makes it a little bit more difficult for me today. But you know, you got about an average of about 3,500 left if you grab Bumgarner and about a 9,000 pitcher. I think you can grab enough value to build kind of a value lineup throughout. I think it'll work in cash.
Yeah, I'm gonna be like I said, take a look at the lineups when they come out for this early slate. All right, let's move on to the evening slate of games. We've got 9 on tap, and it's kind of the same theme as the early one. There's a lot of good pitching today. There were so many above average to really good pitchers going today. I mean, do you feel the same way even about this late slate?
I like the late slate. You don't have that expensive guy like Bumgarner, but I think we've got similar upside as him, so it's going to be a little bit easier to construct lineups in the evening slate for sure.
I mean, this list of pitchers here, we got Darvish, Wainwright, Tanaka, McCullers, Hamill, Cole. I'm not reading these in any particular order necessarily. Even Shoemaker is good. Paxton's been good. Jonathan Gray always is interesting when he's not in Coors. So Dylan Bundy. I mean, there's a lot of arms to target here. I'm interested to see where you go. I'm wondering if we're going to be on the same page here. I'd be shocked if we were totally in lockstep just because of how many different options there are. What are you looking at for the late slate of pitching?
I wrote up Jason Hamill. I really like the run line. They were about -230 favorites last night doing the article. And the only thing that scares me with him, he doesn't go extremely late into games. So, yeah. You know, you only get 5-6 innings out of him. I think he has a good win percentage, and he's going to have some runs behind him, I think, tonight as they're facing. I think he's making his first start this year.
Renato. He was a prospect at one point. I'm not sure he still is, but at one point in his career, he was a real guy. But the Cubs are still expected to put runs up.
Yeah, so he's kind of right there at the top. There is some risk there, like I said, not going deep into games. You kind of want a little more than that for GPP. You want the strikeout upside, and for that, I'm jumping right up to the top and going, you Darvish. Mm-hmm. Some people might still be a little scared with him coming back, but he, so far in 5 starts, he's got a 13.5 K per 9 rate. So if he can start controlling those walks, which I think he can bring it down, you know, even one walk per 9 innings brings him down quite a bit. What I like about him is his ERA is at 3.12, but you look at the xFIP and it's sitting around that 2.6 mark. So he's actually with those numbers, he's pitching a little bit better than what the numbers are actually showing. So he'll be right there for me tonight. And then another guy I'm really looking at is Lance McCullers with that strikeout upside against the Yankees, who rank on the bottom third of the league against right-handed pitching as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting guys. So I'll just backtrack for a second. The Hamill thing is a real problem. The Cubs are so conservative with their pitchers, and they should be. They need these guys for the playoffs, and there's no reason for them to overtax their starting pitching now. And they'll pull guys at 80 pitches pretty consistently. And that, like, it's the same kind of problem with the McCarthy problem, where if you're only going to go pitch 85 pitches, you're just you need every single thing to go right.
Yeah.
For you to even be, honestly, for even you to qualify for the win, because you need to be winning in the fifth, at the end of the fifth, essentially, when you are going to basically get pulled. Maybe you go a little into the sixth, but you need to be winning. You need to have not had a long inning. You need to have grabbed a couple strikes and not let any runs up. It's really hard, man. 82 pitches. I'll probably end up downgrading his projection a little bit because we have him pitching more like in that 95 to 100 range, and that's just simply not the case for him. So that's a big time worry for me on Hamill, and I think you see our projection for him come down. Darvish and McCullers, they're great. They're kind of the same ish in the sense that they have huge upside, but they also walk. McCullers' walk rate is, I say this every 5 days when he pitches, and I'll say it every 5 days for the rest of the season as long as he does, but when you strike out 11.5 but walk more than 5 and have an xFIP in the low 3s, that's like, it's a total anomaly. It's a total anomaly to have that kind of walk rate and have
60% ground ball.
That's actually why you have such a good, that's what keeps the xFIP, is that when every other thing that's happening when you're not walking a guy is either a worm burner into the dirt or a strikeout, then you're an elite pitcher. I think sometimes he works too much around the zone trying to get swinging strikes when he probably could just pound the zone a little more and work that ground ball rate and stay longer into games, but it's just not part of his profile. The strikeout upside for him is real. The Yankees are not a good team. So I probably at this point would favor McCullers over Hamill just because I think he goes longer in the game. And then Darvish, he thankfully has gotten up over 90 pitches the last couple games, so if he gets to like 95 or even pushes up close to 100, you are in good shape with him. The great news on those guys is they're just not that expensive. None of them are over $10,000 on FanDuel, and that leaves a lot of room. When you don't need to pay more than $10,000 for guys with almost double-digit K upside in those two guys, then you're in a great spot. I think for me, I'm with you on those two. On Hamill, I'll probably end up downgrading a little bit because of the pitch count. McCullers and Darvish have the K upside. What do you think of guys like Cole or Wainwright? Cole going against a Seattle team, but in Pittsburgh. Wainwright going against a weaker team in the Mets, and probably I think he's probably going to have a pretty nice money line considering it's Logan Verrett pitching. What do you think of those two guys?
Yeah, I think Wainwright has a good winning potential against the Mets. You know, their lineup is not really that loaded at all, so nothing really there to scare you. Verrett isn't that great, so I think they can get some runs there to back them. But I myself will spend the $400 more on DraftKings and on FanDuel. It's about $400 on both, and roll with Darvish in that K upside today. Especially if I was playing more cash games, Wainwright I think has a little more safety going a little bit later into the game. But Darvish I think has that K upside, and like you said, if he gets up into the 95 to 100 pitch count somewhere in there, you know, we could see 7, 8, 9 innings and, you know, that 10 double-digit K upside again. So for GBP, it's going to be Darvish for me. Cole, I like mixing him in. 8,100 is pretty cheap for the kind of pitcher you're getting with him. He's got definite K upside as well. He's limited the opponent to one earned run or less in two of the last three starts. One of those was the Cardinals, so definitely like him. One other guy that we didn't mention that I'm looking at a little bit, I want to get your opinion on him, is Matt Shoemaker. He's got that K upside as well. He hasn't really gotten blown up besides in Boston. That was about, I think, start of July here. The Royals just aren't the team that we've seen last year, the clutch hitting team. They've lost a lot of players, and I think we can take advantage. I think Shoemaker's going to be a really, really low-owned option tonight.
Yeah, he's interesting. He has that one huge game against the White Sox where he struck out 13. I think that is an outlier in terms of what he can do, but he's about a K and inning guy. That's pretty good. I worry a little bit on him with control, but I just think for me, like for on DraftKings, I don't think I would spend 10-4 on him when I can get, let's say, McCullers at 10-1. You know, or Tanaka, even Tanaka at 9-7, I think I would take over him. So it's just to me, it ends up being a price play. Let me look at his price on Draft on FanDuel real quick.
While you're doing that, just looking at his strikeouts, the anomaly, I'm just looking back at his game logs. He's had three other games with 11 or more strikeouts this year.
I didn't look that far enough.
Baltimore, Houston, and Cleveland. So I guess it's more of a GPP pivot off McCullers. I really like McCullers tonight, but in a few spots, I'm going to be probably building some lineups with Shoemaker and then taking most of those lineups and going McCullers just because Shoemaker's a little more expensive. So it's very easy just to slap colors into the same lineup. So it's one of those situations where I'll build a hitting lineup with Shoemaker, if it's DraftKings, Shoemaker and another pitcher, probably Hamill in there or Garrett Cole, something like that. And then I'll swap in my colors making any other changes.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because actually I feel stupid for like only looking at that recent game log and not going all the way back, because I usually don't fall victim to the game log where I tend to not really look at it because I think it can sway your opinion. And a very good example is it just did for me while just looking it up real quick while we were talking about it. And that is not good process, and it's not a process that I typically adhere to, but I just did right now, because when you look at his peripherals this year are awesome. 9 strikeouts per 9, less than 2 walk rate, 3.62 xFIP. Those peripherals are awesome, and they actually do lend to a guy who should be able to go deeper in games because he's not struggling to putting guys on base all the time. So, yeah, no, I love that pivot. That's great. I can definitely see going that way. Duffy on the other side of the mound is a tough matchup, considering the Angels could struggle to put up runs a little bit. And, you know, one other guy I actually want to ask about is that he was like Irvin Santana yesterday, where he's a big money line guy, but he's not that good as Tyler Duffy. Tyler Duffy on DraftKings is only like 5,800 or something like that. He's really cheap. So could you stomach putting him into a lineup considering the money line and the Braves just being not a very good team, or you just want to end up spending up on pitching here?
Yeah, you know, going back to the GPP, I could see putting him with one of the top guys again. And I could also see going with, you know, if you want to go really contrarian, putting Duffy with like a Garrett Cole and only spending somewhere around that $12,000 or $13,000 on pitching today on both pitchers on DraftKings. You can absolutely load your lineups with hitters. And, you know, you are getting that win potential because they are facing the Braves. Cole's at home in Pittsburgh facing the Mariners. So that's ultra contrarian, really loading up on hitting. I'll probably do that in, you know, 2 or 3 lineups because I hadn't even thought about Duffy until you mentioned him. So you kind of got me on board a little bit, especially at 5,100. I mean, that's cheaper than, probably about 5 or 10 of the hitters.
I think what the theme is, and the theme in the late slate is the same as the evening, is that I think you're going to end up seeing the ownership percentages on pitchers sort of all over the place. I'm interested to see what some other industry people tout today in terms of where to go with pitching, because you can make so many cases for so many different guys in the same price point that you're going to see a nice, healthy spread of ownerships. It's not going to be like your 60% cash game, you know, 65% Scherzer in cash games or whatever it is, or like 70% Jose Fernandez in cash games. That's just not the day today. This is going to be maybe the highest one is 25% or something like that, and then it all goes down from there. So you're really going to be – I think scores and pitching is going to be all over the place. Let's blow through a couple of just value plays that we can look at in terms of bats on this evening slate. Again, same kind of theme. Lots of good pitchers going. Not that many bums to target. Is there a team that really stands out to you in terms of value that you want to get behind, or are you going to be sort of spreading it out between a bunch of different guys?
On FanDuel, I still like the Baltimore Orioles a lot. Their prices are right there. One of the value guys that I like for GPP tonight, I wrote him up, was Chris Davis. I hesitated because since he's come back from the flu, he's hitless, I think, in 4 straight games now. So we've seen his price on DraftKings actually come down to 3,200, where it's 3,800 on FanDuel. So I think there's some value there for GPP. I wouldn't trust him in cash games at all, just with the recent struggles, but I think a lot of people look at that game log and they're going to pivot somewhere else at first base tonight. So he comes with that double dong, huge upside that I like to see, and we'll definitely be going with him at 3,200. And, you know, a little bit on FanDuel, but 3,800 is getting a little high for a guy that's struggling like that. Yeah, another value guy I'm looking at is in the Cardinals game on the Cardinals side of the ball, Amedes Diaz. Not so much on DraftKings at 5,100. I think he's a little overpriced. I could see him for maybe a GPP play, but on FanDuel, I'm going to have him pretty much all over high exposure at 2,700. He's hitting at the top of the order, and I think they're going to be one of the highest scoring games in the evening slate tonight. And at 2,700, he really helps in getting one of those top pitchers in, especially for cash games.
Yeah, I always I mentioned this again. Well, another theme of like something I mention every 4 or 5 days as one of my reoccurring themes for baseball is that if you're not using a projection system, but you want to just maybe sniff out some value along the edges, is just to look at the pricing differences between two sites and just simply, you know, do an easy subtraction problem. And when a guy's super high priced on one site and low on the other, it's good chance it's wrong somewhere. And here, I'm with you on Diaz, it being wrong. 2,700 for a guy hitting near the top of the order for him. Verrett, I'm actually really surprised about the money line in the Cardinals game. They're only minus 122 favorites in a low run expectation. I know the Cardinals have been hurting a little bit on offense, but Logan Verrett is Logan Verrett.
I didn't get that either.
Yeah, I'm a little – that seems weird to me. The other team that I'm with you on targeting, the Orioles, though, I always do get a little worried about rostering guys against Gray, who has strikeout upside. Like, so it can go wrong pretty quick against a guy that does have pretty live stuff. That being said, they have a nice run expectation today. The other team that has a high run expectation, I have them at 5.35 right now, is the Twins. So they are facing Folty. I can't even struggle to pronounce that guy's last name. I've heard it.
Folty works.
Yeah, Folty. I've heard it multiple times, and I just, one of those things where I just get stuck and then I sound like an idiot. So I'm just going to say Folty. They're coming in as one of the, maybe the highest run line expectation of the day, and they have a couple guys, especially on FanDuel. Sano is still coming way too cheap at 3,000. I love him. You have Eduardo Nunez, only 3,600 on DraftKings with multi-position eligibility. That's, he'll be a guy that ends up in most lineups, I think, for me. The stolen base upside for him is great. The price is still cheap. They're a team that is a little weird because, you know, besides Nunez, who is pretty fantasy relevant, Sano has the huge power upside. They don't have a lot of other guys that stand out to you as the, like, again, I've said, this is another thing I say every 3 or 4 days, is they remind me of the Indians in this way, and that the Indians are a really good hitting team that are good because they just kind of go all the way down the lineup with someone that can do some damage to you. So the Twins strike me sort of in that same realm, but guys like Nunez, Sano, still coming pretty cheap. And then I think it's just going to be, for me, kind of one-offs throughout the rest of the lineup. Guys you can grab, you know, McCutcheon's still coming pretty cheap, 3,700. Gannett's pretty cheap, 36. So I can see, again, where I'm waiting to see on some baseball. Some baseball lineups, guys. It sounds like I never talked about baseball. I'm going to wait to see about some lineups later in the day to where we're going to go. But I think, I'm with you. I think we end up doing some Orioles, maybe some Twins, and a couple other guys. Is there any other guy that stood out to you as coming at a nice price today, or is that we're pretty much on the same page?
Well, cash games, if you're playing cash games, I wrote about him again last night. I know he let everyone down. Everyone had him. Was Manny Machado. He's just looking at the pricing again. I mean, when you get a guy that is more expensive on FanDuel than DraftKings, that's a, you know, there's big value there. Yep. on DraftKings, I think, even though I find that this year that do you find that the DK guys or their algorithm is a little bit faster in picking up streaks versus 100%. FanDuel?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. It's streaks and it's splits, and there's probably a couple other things in there. It's opposing pitcher. They ramp you down pretty quick. It's streaks if you're running bad. Although I got to tell you, I should have mentioned him too. But Machado's a must play on DraftKings. 3,500 is nuts. That's a stupid price for him.
He should be 45.
I would almost wouldn't care. That is all. 3,500 for Machado is almost matchup independent for me. Like, he could face just about any pitcher, and I mean, short of the most elite arms, and probably be at least worth a consideration. Well, when he's
look
not
at the guys, yeah, in his range. You got Yanel Escobar, Young Ho Kong, Brandon Snyder, Marwin.
And you got the little exit music playing over your thing, nice. But I don't want to have you re-record that, so we'll keep going. Yeah, I'm with you. The price range around those guys is it really stands out. It's like, oh my god, well, Machado's like close to a superstar, and these other guys are kind of losers. So they're not losers; they're just kind of fine major league players. So yeah, he's on DraftKings almost just a total lock and load as long as he's playing, which he should be. All right. That, I think, covers it. We did a lot of talking about pitching. This is the most we've ever talked about pitching, for sure, on a podcast. We're gonna roll it into some PGA talk here. This week we've got the last PGA major, the PGA Championship, coming up. So that's always a big thing over on DraftKings, where they run Millie Makers just around the fanfare of golf's majors. Chris has done all the research that you're going to need to get yourself started for the PGA Championship with lineups, cheat sheets, and articles. But I'm going to have him walk through. Chris, walk me through a little bit of what you're considering with these majors. I know this one's in my neck of the woods up in Jersey at Baltusrol. So that's basically my only tie to PGA. Otherwise, I know very, very little, but that's what I rely on you for. So walk me through what anyone's going to need to consider this week for the PGA Championship.
For sure. Yeah, so it's the fourth major of the season, last one of the year, the PGA Championship. It got pushed up a little bit this year due to the Olympics coming up. So this is the second major in 3 weeks. So pretty condensed schedule here this summer. I know that a lot of the players watching the interviews are pretty excited about having this much golf, and they don't really have any suggestions of where to move the PGA, so I think it's going to stay here for years to come. But yeah, the course is a Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. And it took me about, I don't know, 2 or 3 days before I could actually say that correctly.
Baltusrol, so, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like the one thing I could have helped you with, because it's like, it was like 5 minutes from my other place, yeah. So yeah, like that was like my only contribution to PGA could have been I could have walked you through the pronunciation of the course.
So it's a par 70, and it's 7,428 yards. And if you're not too familiar with pars on courses, normally, of course, is par 72. So this one's 2 strokes less, and it's over 7,400 yards. So it is a little bit of a beast this week. And just with that length has me looking a lot at driving distance this week. So, of course, one guy right off the bat is going to stand out as Dustin Johnson, because he can hit it far, and he's been very, very accurate, a total driving genius lately. So that's one thing I'm definitely looking at this week. The course is actually one of only 4 courses in America that sits as a national landmark in the U.S., which is pretty interesting. I never knew that before. There are 4 par 4s in the front nine. The front nine is going to be quite challenging. There's 4 par 4s that are over 475 yards, and 2 of them are over 500. So definitely that length. A lot of guys aren't going to be hitting the fairway a whole bunch, so definitely that driving distance, I think, gives you an advantage, because if you've got a guy at 280 yards hitting the rough and a guy at 320, 330 yards hitting the rough, the guy at 330 is going to have a huge advantage, because he's going to be hitting probably a wedge out of the rough, whereas the other guy's probably, you know, in the 7-8 iron kind of range. So it's just a big advantage to those hitters, even if they're hitting from the rough. Now, you're going to have, for the field this week, we've got all but 3 of the top 100 in the world competing right this week. There's also the top 20 PGA professionals that come from the Professionals Championship. So those are the guys that are all over the golf courses all over America teaching lessons, and they're your PGA professionals that you're going to meet and see. So we've got 20 of those in the field this week. Jason Day is a defending champion. The last time Baltusrol was used for the PGA Championship was 2005. Phil Mickelson won with a score of -4. He birdied, I believe it was the 72nd hole to take that win. This week, a couple guys you want to maybe pay attention to, check the news right up to lineup lock, is going to be Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger. They both withdrew their last events. Daniel Berger with a shoulder injury, Koepka with an ankle. From what I'm hearing, they're both going to be playing. Shouldn't be any issues there. I think you can get some low ownership with those guys if you do decide to play them, just because people are always scared with golf injuries. Hmm. We just don't get updates like we do in, you know, other sports, basketball, baseball, pretty much any other sport. There's no association that makes them give news.
Right. I was going to ask, because it's such an individual event, because you can control your own narrative, because you're like just a single entity. Like, they just don't have to tell you anything. There's no one else reporting on your behalf. Is that why the injury thing doesn't really come into play that much?
Exactly. Okay. And it can be extremely frustrating. You'll get a guy like Daniel Berger, I know, screwed a lot of people at, it was the WGC. So he went in, there was a little bit of concern, injury. Now the WGC is something you earn your way into. So he teed off on the first hole, then withdrew right away.
Oh, really? God.
So he got like $58,000-$60,000 just for teeing off on the first hole. So I think he was that week something like 20% owned. So that put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, and I think that could come into play this week if he's going to play. I know I will have some of Daniel Berger. He hits the ball a ton. He's very cheap. And if he's going to be 2-4% owned, I'm all over that.
Is that considered like a shady thing to do? I don't follow golf like this, but is that considered just like a money grab, or does like people just see it as kind of like, well, you're on the DL, you're getting your paycheck? Like I know this has nothing to do with the PGA Championship, but I'm just curious. Like what?
No.
Well, how do people view that? I know people that had them that owned them would feel like they got screwed, but in golf circles, is that considered something that just like people do? Or interesting. Okay.
It's something where the DFS community, it really blew up on Twitter.
Oh, I can imagine.
he just come in for $50,000 and only hits one ball, blah, 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 blah. But the thing is, that tournament, the WGCs, you earn your way into those. So he was getting paid either way.
Right.
So he pretty much showed up to do, you know, talk to the media, to do that kind of stuff. So I don't think in the golf circles with the golfers, that it's that big a deal.
Interesting. So, okay, so back to the PGA. So we have Dustin Johnson's a guy you like, Koepka, Berger. Are those the guys you're mostly building around this week? Is that sort of where your main lines are going to look? Or are you kind of looking, is there any other guys you think you want to mention here?
Cash games, I like to go balance this week. Matt Kuchar, Zach Johnson, kind of in that 7-8K range. Lee Westwood, Brandon Grace, I really like those guys in that. But for GPPs, I find myself doing a lot of stars and scrubs. It's a very spread out salary this week, very soft, so you can build a lot of it's really easy to get two of the top guys in, and two of the top guys that I'm looking at, I'm building a lot of lineups around, starting with these two, is Dustin Johnson, of course, who's been red hot, and Rory McIlroy. I still think he's got something to prove. He's a huge scorer on DraftKings. He does make the double bogeys and the bogeys, but he's been backdooring top tens on Sundays just with tons of birdies. So that correlates really well with DraftKings. So both those guys can make birdies and eagles, so I'll be really high on them. Going down a little bit farther, there's some nice values this week. Like Brant Snedeker with the top five last week, probably would have won if he could have sunk a few putts. He's finished top 15 in the PGA the last 2 years, and he's only coming in at 7,500. Really liking. He's not the longest hitter. I think he ranks like 77th off the tee, driving distance, which is about that 285 yards. But he's a really good scrambler. And I mean, 7,500 is just too cheap. He's like 51-1 odds. Jim Furyk's right there at 7,600 too. He hasn't missed a cut in the last 5 years at the PGA with two top fives. And he also finished 34th in 2005 when this tournament was at Baltusrol. Last as well. So,
and I should remind everyone that all your thoughts and your analysis is also up on our site with the free article with a bunch of picks. But then also you have lineups and cheat sheet available $4.99, where Chris gives you all this breakdown. We'll actually provide you with lineups that you can run that he's toiled over leading up to this. So if you want a golf sweat for the major, then that's the place to go. Head over and grab the cheat sheet and the lineups for $4.99. He's updating it right up until first tee, which is tomorrow morning. But really, most of us. Thoughts are covered there. Chris, one final thought I have about PGA. Do you find that for these majors, DraftKings will, you said the pricing is soft. Is that something that's pretty consistent for all these majors, that with especially like the Millie Maker related ones, where it just draws more people in when the lineups seem like they're a little easier to make?
I think that's what they're trying to do is simply soft pricing, because the rest of the tournaments aren't that soft.
Right.
It's just the four majors, the big ones where you get the top guys in the world. I think they're trying to attract people to that Millie Maker, which to me kind of seems like it's dying week to week. They moved the price last major up to $33. This one's $33 again. It used to be $20.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have like 150,000 entries. It's now down below, I believe, 100,000, like around that 85,000 mark. So they're losing interest in the golf majors. I don't know what's going to happen next year. I really don't have a good feel for what they're going to do or where DFS PGA is going, if it's maybe capped out or what the problem is there. But that's definitely the reason for the soft pricing.
You have to have soft pricing for a casual fan to be able to think that they have any chance, which is what they kind of need to rely on here. Because there's going to be sharps that get in there like you that understand pretty much all of the metrics related to success in PGA. But if I'm just a person that's looking for a little weekend sweat, it's going to be really hard for me to go in there if the pricing is sharpy to make a lineup that I can feel good about with golfers I've heard of, I would suspect. So
exactly.
I think that's probably what I would suspect that that's their motivation. All right, man, this is great. So again, check out Chris's free content, the article breakdown, and get a bunch of different stats, what to look for this weekend. And then while you're in there, $4.99, you grab the lineups and the cheat sheet, and you are all set for a weekend at Baltusrol. Dude, we ran long today, man. This is one.
That was a good day. That was a good day.
No, this is good. One of our longest podcasts ever. Again, check out dfsr.com, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. You get all the free advice that you need for MLB, PGA. We have NASCAR coming throughout, so we're covering basically every DFS sport that you could want. And then you can grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by good friends over at Lineup Lab. That's going to help you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. NFL coming up soon. We're really excited about what we're going to offer there. All right, dude, that's it for us. Chris, good luck this weekend with PGA, and I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Later.